Hi, this is Sally, and welcome to Reclaiming Pride, LGBT plus survivors of narcissistic abuse. Before we start, there is a trigger warning. The episodes of this podcast may at times refer to domestic violence, emotional, financial, and sexual abuse. To begin, I'd like us to start, as always, with a one-word feelings check. What is one word for how you are feeling right now in this moment? Not how other people around you are feeling, or how those you were taking care of are feeling, but how are you feeling right now? In one word. This week, we'll be taking a look at the top 10 things that people should not say to a survivor of narcissistic abuse. Sometimes the people who care about us may not understand what on earth we've just been through. This can also happen if you're an LGBT person and you have straight friends. Oftentimes they may not even understand the dynamic of your relationship, the things that you and your partner have had to undergo socially, emotionally, even economically because of your identity. Now layer on top of that the fact that you may have been in an abusive relationship with your same-sex partner, and it can be a recipe for further invalidation by people who think that all they're trying to do is help. What I'm trying to say is that a lot of the time, these invalidations and these things that you really shouldn't say to somebody who's just been in a toxic or abusive relationship are actually coming from people who have absolutely no idea what it is you've just been through, period. And to be honest, only somebody who's been in a narcissistic or toxic relationship or a really, really good therapist with B-cluster personality disorder expertise is ever going to fully understand. I'll just be really honest. And even then, the subtle nuances of the abuse that you underwent with your particular ex can only really ever be understood by you. So when people make blanket statements about what it is that you've just been through, they may be seeking to speak rather than to listen. This can feel basically, well, awful. So whether you're somebody who's been in a narcissistic or toxic relationship and you're seeking validation, or if you're a relative, friend, or even a new partner of somebody who's been in a narcissistic or toxic relationship, I'd encourage you to listen to the following points, as these may help you communicate your way in love with the person who is the survivor. Honestly, if I had a dollar for every time someone said one of the things we're going to be talking about today to me, I'd be a really rich person. Supporting a survivor of narcissistic abuse requires sensitivity and understanding. So here are some of the things that one should generally avoid saying to someone who has experienced narcissistic abuse. One, you're too sensitive. So what this does is it can invalidate the survivor's feelings and experiences and make them feel dismissed or unheard. The triggering aspect of this is that the statement invalidates the survivor's emotions, suggesting that our feelings are exaggerated or unwarranted. This can trigger feelings of self-doubt, shame, and further isolation, as a survivor might internalize the belief that their emotional responses are flawed. So we spent a long time with a person, or what may have felt like an even longer time with a person, who invalidated us and made us feel that our beliefs, emotions, anything about us was invalid, that the only valid and right way to view the world was the narcissist's. So once we're out of that situation, to experience that again with people who are supposed to care about us and love us can be very triggering. Next, why didn't you leave sooner? Leaving an abusive relationship is a complex process, and survivors may face various barriers, including fear, manipulation, financial dependence. This question can unintentionally blame the survivor. The triggering aspect of this is that the question places the blame on the survivor for not leaving the abusive situation earlier. It overlooks the complexities of abusive relationships, such as fear, manipulation, and financial abuse and dependence. The survivor may feel triggered to defend their actions or experience and might feel heightened feelings of guilt and inadequacy. 3. It can't have been that bad. Minimizing the severity of the abuse can make the survivor feel isolated and misunderstood. And a triggering aspect of this is minimizing the severity of the abuse dismisses the survivor's pain and may trigger feelings of isolation. Survivors often grapple with self-doubt and fear of not being believed because that's what they put up with for such a long time in their abusive relationship. This statement reinforces that idea that their experiences are not significant, not that important, that they're imagining things, which is often the kind of gaslighting they would have experienced with their narcissistic ex friend or family member. And this intensifies the person's emotional distress. And don't forget, you're dealing with someone who probably knows how to keep it all inside. And they may have been keeping it all inside for decades. Imagine what that does to somebody's health. 4, you must have done something to provoke it. Placing blame on the survivor perpetuates victim shaming and fails to recognize that abuse is never the fault of the person experiencing it. The triggering aspect of saying something like this is that it's blaming the survivor for the abuse, and this perpetuates victim shaming and triggers feelings of guilt and self-blame. Survivors may already struggle with questioning their own actions, their own reality, and this statement deepens those wounds and impedes the healing process. 5. Just forget about it and move on. It's been a while now, hasn't it? How long has it been? And then the person is made to recount how long it's been since the relationship ended. Recovering from narcissistic abuse is a gradual process. There is no timeline. And simply telling someone to move on can downplay the emotional and psychological impact of the abuse. I'm going to have an episode soon on how escaping narcissistic abuse and then working on yourself afterwards to kind of gain some sort of normalcy afterwards is almost exactly the same as being deprogrammed from a cult. The triggering aspect of saying, just forget about it and move on, is that this minimizes the complexity of the healing journey. So survivors might feel pressure to suppress their emotions and move on, leading to emotional repression. The statement can trigger a sense of inadequacy, as the person might struggle to conform to societal expectations of moving on more swiftly. You might have people suggest that you go on online dating apps. You might have people suggest that you go to singles events. Only you know when you are ready. You may physically look ready. You may be out and having fun, but you know that in an intimate relationship, you are not ready yet. And you probably don't want to do that to somebody else. 6. I never saw any signs of abuse. Narcissists often present a different face to the outside world, and their abusive behaviors may not be immediately apparent. Discrediting a survivor's experiences can make them feel extremely isolated. The triggering aspect of this is that when we discredit a survivor's experience by claiming lack of visible signs, this can intensify their own feelings of being misunderstood, of being isolated, of maybe wondering if it was their fault. Are they exaggerating? So really and truly what happens is they start being the narcissist to themselves. They literally start playing the narcissist tapes in their head and gaslighting themselves. Survivors often describe how their abusers present a different persona in public. So a statement like this triggers feelings of not being believed. 7. You should try and reconcile with your abuser, or you should try and get back together with that person, or maybe you should just have a conversation. Have you ever thought of just giving them a call, maybe asking, what was all that about? Reconciliation is a personal decision and may not be advisable in cases of narcissistic abuse. Remember, this person is dangerous, often physically violent, certainly emotionally and mentally abusive. Encouraging a reconciliation without understanding the complexities of that relationship can be a harmful thing to suggest. A triggering aspect of this is that encouraging reconciliation without understanding the relationship itself can trigger feelings of frustration and helplessness as a survivor grapples with the difficulty of explaining the intricacies over and over again of the abuse to others who may not fully comprehend. In other words, the survivor often feels the need to justify themselves, why they're being so quote unquote extreme and cutting this person out of their life, or this person's children, or this person's family, or this person's friends, business associates, basically anybody who's in the orbit of the narcissist. Many people will feel that they need to cut them all out. I have this experience myself, so I completely understand it. 8, I know exactly how you feel. Every survivor's experience is unique, and claiming to know exactly how somebody else feels from that situation may not be accurate. It's better to express empathy and a willingness to listen. A triggering aspect can be that claiming to know exactly how someone else feels oversimplifies the survivor's unique experience. It might trigger feelings of frustration and, again, isolation, as the survivor perceives a lack of genuine understanding. This statement can inadvertently downplay the complexity of a survivor's emotions, experiences and trauma. 9. You know, you're lucky it wasn't worse. I've known people who've been in much worse situations. Comparing trauma or minimizing someone's pain by suggesting it could have been worse is not supportive. Everybody's pain is valid, and acknowledging this is crucial. A triggering aspect of this is comparing trauma or suggesting luck minimizes a survivor's pain and trauma. It can trigger feelings of guilt and invalidate someone's suffering and reinforce the harmful belief that our experiences are not significant enough to warrant empathy and or support. 10. Just be grateful for what you have now. Or, look how far you've come from that. Aren't you just grateful for everything you have now? While focusing on gratitude can be beneficial, pressuring a survivor to be grateful without addressing their trauma can be dismissive and counterproductive and is akin to toxic positivity. A triggering aspect of this is that pressuring someone to be grateful without addressing their trauma dismisses the impact of the abuse on their mental health and physical health. It might trigger feelings of frustration, and as the survivor might feel unable to express their pain openly. So it's sort of like, do you want to start dating again? Like that question earlier, someone might feel censored if you ask them a question like that. And there's a bonus one, 11. Oh, it's all right. You'll be okay. It's not a big deal. It's a while ago now. I'm here. The person knows that you are there for them because otherwise they wouldn't have trusted you with their secrets and the shame that they told you all about around being in a narcissistic and toxic relationship. The fact that you are there for them is not in question, but it is more important to note that this indeed is a huge deal, not just a big deal. Being in a toxic relationship with a narcissist for any period of time leaves its mark emotionally and physically. It can lead to depression, addiction, physical emotional illness, and at times, and at the darker end of the spectrum, death. Even bumping into somebody in the street or at an event who was associated with the narcissist can be extremely traumatizing for somebody who has exited a relationship with a narcissistic person. Please understand that even something like a chance encounter with somebody who was associated with their ex-abuser can also be traumatic and can take days or even weeks to get over. This is not nothing. The triggering aspect of this is that no one knows better than the survivor that the only person that can really make it all right, quote unquote, after the relationship with the abuser is themselves. And this can feel extremely lonely. To tell someone like this, oh, it's all right, can make the person feel even more lonely because they are the only ones that know how they struggle when nobody else is around. So in addition to all of this, the long silences after you've described something and then a retort like, perhaps you could have done more, or you should have been protecting the others in the same environment that you were in more. Most people who give you this type of reaction have never found themselves in constant fear for their mental and physical well-being. They do not understand that you did everything you could and were still systematically abused. They also do not understand that you standing up for another person in the same environment actually could have made it worse for both of you. It could have led to further violence to the person you were trying to protect and also to yourself. People need to understand that this is literally a life or death situation when you are trapped in a house, apartment, room, or a car with a narcissistic person. They are dangerous, and people really do need to understand this. To say to someone who is a survivor of an abusive relationship that you could have done more or you should have done more to protect the people around you from this person is like saying to the victim of domestic violence, oh, you could have fought back harder. The list of similarities goes on, as you can only imagine. This can be extremely frustrating for abuse survivors who are LGBT+, also, as we have already had to withstand being marginalized and invalidated enough without enduring further abuse, only to be invalidated even further by the folks who are seeking to help us. Instead of making assumptions or offering quick solutions, it's always important to listen empathetically, validate someone's feelings, and encourage them to seek professional support if they need it. Every survivor's journey is unique, and providing a safe and non-judgmental space is crucial in supporting someone's healing process. In summary, each of the statements we talked about today contains triggering aspects that can exacerbate the emotional distress of survivors of narcissistic abuse. Understanding and avoiding these triggers is essential when offering any support to promote a more empathetic and healing environment. So I hope that helped to outline some of the ways in which some of the more common responses to a survivor can hurt rather than help. We're going to take a break now, and afterwards I'll be back with a listener question. I'll see you in a moment. Welcome back. This week's listener question is, does the narcissist know what they are doing? Well, the answer is yes, absolutely yes, and always yes. Proof of this would simply be that they act differently behind closed doors than they do out in public. This is extremely common. They hide their abuse, which makes them absolutely cognizant of it. If a narcissist is physically violent, what you will notice and what has been often said by survivors is that they will hurt you and bruise you in places that are not noticeable. They know exactly what they are doing, and it is calculated and it is deliberate. The thing is that they don't actually know that it's wrong. They see themselves as the victim of others and of society. They are the golden child who has been mistreated and misunderstood. You are annoying. You are boring. You deserve everything that you have coming to you. So the fact, therefore, that they calculate everything that they are doing to you, both physically and emotionally, in their mind is completely justified. I know that at once makes sense and completely doesn't make sense all at the same time. It's because you're inside the head of somebody who has a B cluster personality disorder. For example, in my past narcissistic relationship, when we used to live in the place that my ex paid for, the physical violence was pretty regular. Then, when we moved into the place that I paid for, that I own, the violence suddenly, magically stopped. The verbal, emotional abuse didn't stop. The damage to property didn't stop. The threats didn't stop. All of the rest of it didn't stop, including dangerous driving, screaming and yelling an inch away from my ear. But the physical violence, that stopped. The fact was as clear as the nose on your face that she didn't want to get thrown out of the house, so she couldn't have anything that would leave proof that she needed to be removed, and physical violence is really the only way that she could actually have been removed from the home. And don't forget, narcissists are highly manipulative, and this is also totally cognizant. A person with NPD may be skilled in manipulating others, which can include downplaying the severity of their behavior or using charm to maintain control over you and over the relationship. Listener, they know exactly what they're doing. Don't let anybody, especially them, tell you any different. I hope this helped to answer your question. Thank you for sending it. If you would like to ask a question on and have it answered here, you can post it on the Instagram or Facebook accounts for this podcast, and they're linked on the website banner. Please note, this podcast is not intended to replace professional therapy or counselling. It serves as a supplementary resource for support and encouragement. Listeners, you are encouraged to seek professional help if needed. I did, and it still works for me every day. Stay tuned, and I look forward to healing with you next time. Bye-bye.